1888 Podcast Network.
I'm John Barrett Ingalls, and this is The How, The Why. Presented by 1888. Every week, we connect with artists, authors, and innovators in the world of publishing and literature to discuss their creative process and creative purpose, and explore the evolution of the industry. 1888 serves as a regional catalyst for the preservation, presentation, and promotion of cultural heritage and literary arts. Let's get connected. Hello and welcome to The How, The Why, brought to you by 1888. My name is John Barrett Ingalls, and today we are connected with Steve Martinez, artist, muralist, graphic designer, graphic artist, street artist, so many different tags we could put on. Tags, I just use that as a word, and we'll get into that later. But Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, John.
Absolutely, man. So I'd love to talk. I mean, we briefly touched on this in our pre-interview conversation, but I'd love for you to talk about where the beginnings of art came into your life and what were some of your early inspirations as a young man.
Oh, man. So many. I've been drawing pretty much since I can remember, like, you know, I was pretty young when I started just like drawing, you know, favorite like cartoon characters and comic book characters, and just kind of like self-taught, you know, just drawing stuff for myself and, like, you know, for kids in my classroom. But I have an older brother. He's 9 years older than me. His name's Richard. And so when I was like in elementary, he was like middle school, high school, and he was really into hip hop, and he was a b-boy, you know, and with his little crew that he used to like hang with, there was a graffiti writer in his crew that he used to hang out with, and like that guy taught me how to do bubble letters before I even knew what graffiti was. You know, so and I used to worship my brother. I mean, I still love my brother, but he used to be like a god.
Sure, yeah. When you're a kid, you're looking up at like, wow, the coolest person in the world.
This is like the golden era of hip hop too. Like, you know, Run DMC, LL Cool J, you know, all that good stuff. And like, so this kid, he used to tag Junior, and he was really good. And so he taught me how to do bubble letters, and I used to, in elementary, I was doing bubble letters for elementary school kids, you know, and like without really grasping the concept of like what graffiti was, I just knew how to do letters, you know. And then from there, like, I just kept drawing, and I always had like teachers that in school that kind of recognized that I like to draw, and they kind of pushed that a little bit, you know, for me. And then it wasn't until like middle school that when I was in middle school that I met this kid. This is in the San Fernando Valley. I grew up in Southgate and then moved to the San Fernando Valley. And the San Fernando Valley is where I met this kid that was a graffiti artist. And I really liked his tags. His tags were just like amazing to me. And he opened this just like this whole new world. And he told me, like, don't get into graffiti. Like, this is a really bad habit. It's really addicting. And I was like, I want more, dude. Like, show me. You know, so I made that kid actually, I made him do like the alphabet for me in like graffiti letters.
Sure.
This is like late 80s, early 90s. It's like late 80s. It's like 89. I had him do like these graffiti letters for me. And I actually still have that piece of paper. And like, I just practiced those letters, like.
And this is just with pen at this point, right? Yeah.
This is just a bit. I told him, like, dude, do this for me, you know? And he was right, man. It was a really bad habit. Like, I wanted to write on everything. And that was actually my first graffiti name, was Habit. and that was my name at the time. And I later on changed it to Pledic once I really got into graffiti. But yeah, it kind of just stemmed from there. And like, I wanted to write on everything, you know. And it's something about writing on stuff without having permission that just feels very liberating. It's kind of hard to explain, but it just makes you feel very free.
Sure. Yeah. Cause there's a danger element of getting caught, right?
Most definitely. Yes.
But then there's also that creative output and it's also representing as well. Like, this is you.
Exactly. Yeah. There's definitely, you're boasting. It's all about, graph is like all about boasting. It's the same thing like rappers, you know, like every rapper boasts like they're the best
right.
rapper in yeah. the game. You know, same thing with graffiti. Everybody wants to be king of the streets, and like, you become a celebrity, a local celebrity, like, you know, in a certain circle, like, kids know, oh, like, that's you, that's dope, you know, like, that's just, it's weird, you know. But
I was gonna talk about that, like, graffiti art is an interesting thing because there's an anonymity to it, and I think this like goes into street art as well. Nobody is doing it to become famous, because you're anonymous for the most part. You have your name, right? You said you went by Habit and then by Puede, and
it's actually Pledic.
Oh, sorry. How do you say it? How do you say it?
It's weird. Pledic, Pletk.
Okay, Pledic. Yeah. Okay. But there's an anonymity to it, right? Nobody associates that with you unless they.
They know you,
yeah.
It's very secret club that only street kids know.
now let's talk about the, you know, I am naive and I admit it, and I apologize for any of my naivete, but let's talk about the difference between tagging, graffiti, and street art.
Okay.
If you don't mind. And then it seems like that's kind of where the progression starts. You start with tagging, and then you move to more graffiti art, and then street art, or these bigger murals. Is that kind of how the progression works for artists?
For the most part, I mean, I think you mentioned it earlier. Like, back in the day, graffiti wasn't a career.
Yeah.
You know? Street art really wasn't a career. I mean, we've always had like muralists, you know, like Diego Rivera, you know, that you wouldn't consider street art. You
right.
know, that's just a mural.
They were hired by either the government or the building owners or whoever to paint this mural.
Back to the Renaissance days and like, you know, people getting hired by the Catholic Church to do like, you know, Sistine Chapel, for
example. Exactly, yeah.
And those are murals, essentially. That's what they are. But, like tagging, you definitely like have to start somewhere. Everybody starts somewhere. And for the most part, like back in those days, we weren't seeing graffiti as like, oh, this is a way out, or this is, I'm doing this to gain some type of like fame or to get out of the hood or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a lot of money. And that's kind of different than rapping or hip-hop, where it's about like, oh, I got to get this mixtape out so that I could get a record deal and then I could start making the money. It's kind of that opposite, and back to that anonymity that we were talking about as well.
Even like you know, if you're a rapper or producer, like, you technically only need a one-hit wonder, and you can probably live off of that for the rest of your life.
Right, yeah.
You know? But yeah, with graffiti, though, now you can actually, kids can look at it like, I can turn this into a career, essentially. You know, it's so commercialized now.
True. And that's really only in the last 10, maybe, plus years?
Yeah, if that, you know. Yeah. But it's still a really hard career. I mean, like, you can count how many cats are doing graffiti and doing it professionally and killing it, you know? There's only a handful. It's really hard. But it's possible. But yeah, like, so back in the day, tagging, like, it wasn't about that. It was more just like a form of expression. It was an outlet for us. You know, you have all this energy, and like, it needs to get out somewhere, you know? And like, for me, tagging was definitely the less, it was like the best of like, of evils to choose from, or sure, avenues to choose from. Because at the time, you know, like, you know, LA was infested with gangs. I had friends that were addicted to crack in middle school, you know, like, and it's just like, I had to kind of choose a lane, you know, like, I try to play sports, but that, you know, due to my income situation with my family, I wasn't able to play sports because we couldn't afford the insurance.
Right.
So it's like, so I had like all this free time and all this like energy that needed to get out. And so I chose graffiti. I think I gravitated to that naturally just because I've been drawing all my life since I was a kid. And then it just kind of like went hand in hand. But back to your question, tagging, you definitely do start with tagging. And that's how I started in the graffiti game. And you just, you know, you practice your letters, you get them down, and then you just want to put it up everywhere. And then it slowly, I think for me, this is me personally, because I'm sure everybody else is different, sure, but being an artist, like, drawing on my life, I naturally gravitated to wanting to do more, like, not just tagging. I wanted to do letters, you know, like, and so I naturally started gravitating towards doing pieces of letters and then throwing characters in, you know, like, and it just kind of started evolving from there. And it's just, you know, things just got more serious for me. And then eventually, you know, I went to study art. I went to a community college in the Valley called Alley Valley College, LAVC. And the only reason why I went to that was because I had no idea, no clue what I was going to do with my life after high school. And again, my brother, you know, recognizing that, you know, I was always drawing and, you know, I was doing this, you know, graffiti and like getting in trouble. He's like, dude, you should go study art because that's what you like to do. So, you know, and it had never crossed my mind. And I was just like, you know what? You're right. I should do it. I was already like maybe 19, 20 years old when I decided to go to school and just study like basic stuff, like, you know, drawing 101, graphic design, color theory, just like things that I never were taught because I'm self-taught, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And once I did that, then it was like my pencil got sharpened.
Right. You know,
I was drawing with a really dull pencil, and then all of a sudden, like, I have a really sharp pencil now, and then just everything just became much more clearer. And then that's when that led me into meeting the friends that I have now and the circle of friends that I have now that led me into the fine arts and teach other graffiti artists that were killing it in the game, you know, in the 90s. And they're like, dude, you should start painting, you know? And it's just like, so I started just like, I got introduced to like all these amazing artists, like, you know, like Salvador Dali and just like, you know, Picasso, Braque, like that whole movement, you know? And then you got the Keith Herrings, the Basquiat, like just everything, you know? Like, I just got bombarded with all this art and I just fell in love with it. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give painting a shot. And then just started painting. And then from painting led me into doing murals.
Right. You
know? And so things just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's kind of just like where how it's – for my timeline, that's kind of like how it – that's how it stemmed out.
What's the experience like of, you know, being a graffiti artist and having to work in the shadows of painting these big pieces and then – actually doing it and like having somebody say, well, no, this is okay, we want you to do that, and we're even going to give you money to do this piece.
Right. It's kind of surreal sometimes. I find myself sometimes in like I was a banker for 10 years for Chase Bank, and I find myself painting a giant wall, say, you know, for like a commission for the city, you know, for the city of LA. And it's like, you know, I'm up on a lift, you know, like 30 feet up, like looking at the, you know, like skyline, And it's just like, fuck, this is my office. this is what I'm doing. This, like, I'm getting paid for this, you know? And it's just like, you know, and there's nobody there to tell me what to do, how to do it. It's just like, it's just me.
Right.
It's just me and a ball and a brush and, like, you know, buckets of paint, you know? And it's crazy. Like, sometimes I like to just sit there and, like, take it in and just, like, damn, this is crazy how far I've taken it. And, like, even, like, one of my big inspirations as a kid was my parents used to commute from Southgate to the San Fernando Valley on the weekends. We would go almost every weekend, and we would drive on the 101 freeway and go through all the murals that are on the 101, you know, mm-hmm. like, with, like,
downtown.
Yeah, like the Kim Twitchell, like the hands, you know, yeah. The hands. And one of my favorite murals is what is it called? I think it's called Galileo. It's the one with it's like you see like Jupiter and there's like an astronaut and like
yeah, totally.
It's like all broken up. That mural to this day is still one of my favorite murals in LA or of all times. Like, I love that mural. And so to bring it full circle, I used to see that, right? Like, as a kid, and just wonder, like, damn, how did they do this? And then bring it full circle, like, I've worked with some of those artists.
Wow.
I've had shows with some of those artists. And, like, and then, like, I've worked with, like, this nonprofit organization called MCLA, which is the Mural Conservatory of LA. And they're bringing back all those murals. And to be able to work with them and the muralists that are bringing back those murals, like, it just brings full circle for me. It's just like, damn, like, I can't believe I'm there, you know, like, it's just surreal to me sometimes.
Well, that's you're hitting on something that I was going to bring up too, but the importance of public art.
Yes.
The necessity of public art. It's not just about beautifying the neighborhood, but it's about inspiring the young kids who are in their parents' car as they're driving from Southgate to San Fernando Valley.
Most definitely, yes. Like, and that's actually why I love doing what I do, and it's because of that, because I understand it. That you can say that saved me.
Hmm.
You know, art saved me. Like, art pulled me out of I don't know what the hell I would be doing without art, you know? And I, like, bringing it full circle, like, me doing art in public spaces and having little kids come up and talk to me, I love letting them know, if you love drawing, you can do this for a living if you want, you know? Like, if don't stop drawing. Don't stop, you know, using your imagination or like, you know, don't let people tell you you can't do this. You know, like, you just have to pursue it. And if this is what you love to do, you can actually make this into a career, you know, and it's not an easy one.
Right.
It's definitely not an easy career, but it's definitely possible. And yeah, I love, or even like just having a kid that's never, the thing is, like, especially when it's like people, kids or even grownups that like are not exposed to the arts, you know, like have never gone to a museum, have never stepped into a gallery. And they see you doing this thing and they don't understand it or they don't completely grasp it, but they love it.
Yeah.
And they don't know why they love it, but they do. And it's just like, that's everything to me. And it's like, you start a dialogue, you start a conversation, and hopefully you spark something into them that, like, maybe now they are going to go check out a museum, you know, like, or maybe something sparked in them and, like, they're going to look more into, like, the arts because they like that feeling of what – the engagement of, like, well, they just saw this thing come to life right in front of them, you know? And people will pop in, you know, like, say a mural that I've been working on for a week, you know, someone will stop by, like, right in the beginning, and then they stop right, you know, like, towards the end. It's just like, wow, like, I saw you do this. Like, I've been seeing you, the progression of this, and it's crazy, you know? And it's just like, cool, man. Like, you know, and it's just, that's, to me, that's everything.
Right.
I think that's the most gratifying thing for me, is to be able to inspire young people to just, like, pursue the arts or just get into it. Just go to a museum, you know, like, go to a gallery and just, like, really engulf yourself in it, you know?
And what is your experience of how does it feel to see mainstream culture finally catching on and embracing street artists and graffiti artists, and like having exhibits in museums of street art and graffiti art, in big museums too, not just, you know, like here's a little thing. Oh, like, what is that? What is that like? I mean, from somebody who grew up in this scene.
Yeah, like Mocha had a show a few years back.
Yeah, I remember that.
That there's actually a show right now too. The same curator that curated that brought it back to LA. But it's not in the museum. It's not in the Mocha this time. And this time he rented a just a huge building, and it's basically graffiti history. You know, like everybody that was killing it back in the day, from the that grandfathered it to like the people that are killing it now. You know, it's like this huge show, but it's bittersweet. You know, to answer your question, it's amazing to see how far it's come. But at the same time, it's also, I also hate seeing it when it's really watered down. Right. And like, you know, at the end of the day, this is my culture. You know, like we created this culture, and some people obviously take advantage of it. You know, and just to touch on that real quick, like say for example, I don't know if you heard the whole deal with H&M.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
You know, so they used someone's graffiti. You know, and this gentleman is he's a really well-known, respected artist here in LA. He's a contemporary artist now. He went from graffiti to contemporary artist, and he's killing it. You know, like he's killing it right now. But they used his graffiti for an advertisement without even knowing that it was him. And it wasn't until him and his lawyer hit them up, and it's like, hey, you guys use this as an ad. You know, like, you know, you guys should pay me. And they're like, no, this is graffiti. It wasn't done legally, so we're going to not pay. And then on top of that, they slapped the whole art community with, like, we're going to also file suit to be able to use any graffiti and not pay a dime for it, you know? And obviously that caused a ruckus in the art world general, you know? And, like, to the point where even graffiti artists took it upon themselves to destroy H&M stores.
Saw that, yeah.
Which, like, obviously, I don't condemn that, but this is the battle that they chose. And, you know, now they, I think they have like $4 billion of overstock that they can't sell, you know, like, so it's, and that's the bittersweet of it. You know, like, there's things like that. That's like, you would think graffiti's so big now, and street art is so big. You would think they would, and they say they're trying to push the culture, but they're actually just using it and abusing it. You know, they want to have the street cred, but they don't want to pay for it.
Right.
Like, it's not right. To me, that's not right. So that's, you know, there's a lot of positivity, but there's also a lot of negativity that comes with it. But it's definitely in a better place now. I mean, it's come a long way, you know. But like, back to my, like, going back to like some of what inspired me, I don't know if you're familiar with an artist that goes by, his name's Barry McGee. He's mm-hmm. from San Francisco. His street name is Twist. But he's actually, when I was going to school, he had a show at the Hammer Museum. And I just happened to stumble upon it one day. And this is like early 90s. He was the first graffiti artist that I saw in a museum. Wow. And I was just like, whoa, like, what the hell? Like, this guy has a, you know, this is before social media or whatever, so I didn't even know he had a show there. So then I found out, I went to a museum and I asked, like, when do you have free days, you know? And I think it was, like, on a Thursday. So I went back on Thursday, and I saw his show, and I was just, like, mind blown, you know? And it was just, like, I think, that pivoted point where I was, like, okay, I want to do this for a living. Like, I can do this. And at the time, I wasn't even painting it. I was just doing graffiti. You know, I was barely stepping into the whole, like, doing the transition of, like, being a painter. You know, like, or doing fine art or contemporary art. I was barely stepping into that. But I already knew, like, after seeing that show changed my life. And it was just like, I can do this. Hmm. If this can do this, I can do this. You know, and yeah, that was like a really important moment in my life, I think, for my career, was seeing that Twist show.
What's the experience of You know, so you put a mural, or you have a mural that of someone else that you really respect, and some young tagger tags over it. I mean, you know that person is starting off and doing their own thing, but like and with unconscripted murals, people are tagging over art all the time. But what is that like now that you're actually doing these things and getting paid for them?
Yeah, it happens. I've come to learn, especially when nothing's forever, you know, and especially when it comes to murals. I've come to learn that, like, I'm lucky if one of my murals runs for like a year, you know. I actually have a mural right now that is probably going on like 7 years now, and that's like, whoa, you know, like that's amazing. Because usually, you know, someone tags over it, and then people keep on tagging. And if you're not on top of it, if you don't take care of it, you know, people just keep on tagging it more, and then it just gets destroyed. And there's also another side to that. There's also corporate people that go over your stuff. You know, like I've seen incidents or have experience where we've done a mural, that was there for like a month because the building owner got paid to buff it because they wanted to use it as a backdrop for like a TV show.
Oh man.
He takes the money, and you know, and the mural gets erased. So I've been through that as well, you know. So like I've experienced a little bit of everything, but it comes with the it's organic that graffiti, street art, it's organic that way. You can't be mad at it,
Right.
like
'Cause
nothing.
you know there's a temporariness to it.
Yeah, you know, like, and you, I've come to learn, just come into terms with it. It's part of it, you know. Like for me, it doesn't bother me as much. Obviously, it sucks. Like, oh damn, my piece got tagged, you know, like it happens. But it's organic that way, and I don't hate it either, because like you said, you know, like these are kids that don't know any better, and they might even really like your piece, you know, and that's just them showing you love. Like, oh, I want to be a part of this piece because I really like it, and now my name's on it. You know, like that's their mentality, you know. And I want to say I wasn't that naive though as a kid. When I was doing graffiti, I would respect pieces, you know, certain murals I would respect. I would not tag on pieces. I had certain rules back in the day, but it was different times back then. These kids now, like, they have no respect. You know, but I actually have a mural right now in North Hollywood. It's probably been like a year now. It has been tagged twice, you know. And the people that got me that wall, which was part of the city council of North Hollywood, and like which is their arts district, and then like the owner of the building, they always hit me up like, hey, you want to come and fix it? And I'm like, yeah, I'll go fix it, you know. And I go and fix it real quick. And luckily though, the kid, because that piece or that mural has a portrait in the center. It's like a pretty big portrait. It's like maybe 15 feet. And luckily they haven't touched the portrait. It's just like the background. The background's really easy to fix. So I'll just go and fix it. You know, like, so I've only had to fix it twice. But it happens. You know, like, I'm not mad at it. It's like I said, it's very organic that way. And sometimes it actually adds to it. It adds another layer of life to it, you know? And so yeah, I can't hate on it.
Now, if you could choose one thing to do forever, would it be large format murals, or do you like working on the smaller formats of frames or even smaller?
Oh man, that's tough, dude. I love both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy both. Like I said earlier, you know, painting in public places and just dealing with the public and seeing the reaction and inspiring people, I think that's very important in art. In general, you know, I think it's very important to inspire the youth, and just art in general. You know, just having art. And like, 'cause not everybody, going back, you know, some of these neighborhoods, like, you know, neighborhoods that I grew up in, you know, like some of these kids will never go to a gallery or to a museum. they'll never be exposed to that.
Yeah.
So to be able to bring that to them, I think is very important. So I definitely I have love for both, because at the other end, like dealing with personal work, like on canvas or wood panels, or even stuff on paper, that it's more intimate, you know, because you lock yourself up in your studio and you're just like pouring yourself out on what you love, and then you share it with people, or like at a gallery or you know, or at a show or a museum, and then to see people connect with it and really love it, it's another feeling, and it's kind of hard to explain, but it's one of those things where it's just like, wow, like it just feels surreal when people connect with your pieces so much that they want to have the piece in their house, or you know, or they want to commission you for something because they love your style, you know. So it's really hard to choose. I love both worlds too much. I don't know. I'm like stuck. I'm like right in the middle of that.
Right.
Thing, you know, because I don't think I would ever stop doing either or. You know.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. Your mural in the workshop basement of 1888 is awesome, and I love doing programs in there. It just
thank you so much, man.
Brings it alive, and I feel, you know, I feel so much more connected to that space and to my guests. Your website, stvmartinezart.com, is awesome, and everybody can go and check that out and see some of your other works as well. Thank you so much, man. This is a lot of fun talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. No, thank you for having me. You know, it's always great to be able to share, you know, give a little insight, and thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
This has been The How, The Why with John Barrett Ingalls. The show is produced by Kevin Stanek and yours truly, with production assistance by Sarah Becker. The How, The Why theme music was composed and performed by Dan Record. Please consider supporting 1888 and our mission. Become an 1888 advocate by purchasing our books, participating in our programs, and pledging today. For more information, visit 1888.center. That's 1-888-Center. I want to remind you all to keep making art. Thank you.